Welcome to lecture 12, I think. Yeah, I count 12. And if it's not, I'll go and edit it out at the end and change the number, because I do that. We have some good news. You know how I've been raving on and on about MikroTik routers and stuff for the last 2 months or so? I was telling Matthew this yesterday. We actually have five 751 U2s, which are a router with N wireless USB port and two MIMO aerials on it. They're donating five of them to the Academy. And we are looking at doing a random draw at the end of semester, and whoever's name comes out of the hat, if you have submitted all of your labs and worksheets, you get a router.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah, it's $79 worth of router, so the way we look at it, it's like, well, there's most of your course fees back. Yeah, so you get their little boxes running Linux and put them in, and they do IPv6 as well, which might be a reason why people might want them. They've got IPv6 support, and it's quite interesting. The wireless can also go into what we call conformance mode, which means you can actually shove it off the regular channels and bounce it around the spectrum a bit. So that's always fun. But yeah, so they're sending us five units, and then we're just figuring out how many we're giving them away to who, and whether we're setting up any to run in the Academy. I think we might have one running the Academy, because Cisco's are a pile as far as port forwards and network address translation is concerned. They work, but you cannot take out a port forward on an active interface, and that annoys me immensely.
Yeah, I just had to replace my router this week. Right before I was about to start work on Thursday, my current router decided to blow up, so I had to go and run down to the hardware store or computer store, get a new router, and get back and be late for work. It was great.
Okay. Are you DSL or cable or?
I'm DSL, but I'm just running a standard router. It's a Linksys.
Okay, well, if you happen to get lucky enough to win the MikroTik, that will be a significant upgrade on the Linksys, let me tell you. Yeah, 5 gigabit ports, VLANs, IPv6, tunneling, OpenVPN, point-to-point tunnels. You'll be able to get it to connect to your work VPN if you've got one. All that sort of fun stuff.
Jason has a full Cisco lab. I think he's disqualified from the competition.
I think not.
Well, we'll let you guys fight that out, shall we? I'm not getting involved in that one. But then again, then we could argue that all you guys should go get Dynamips and install your own little Cisco labs, and then you'll have one too. Okay, does anybody need the Dropbox link for the working document again?
Yes, please.
I'm wondering whether I should actually copy it up onto the web server so that you guys can just get it from there. That might be a good idea, hey?
It would be easier if it's not too much of a hassle.
No, it probably isn't, actually. Let's have a look. No, Exploration Practical is the scary one. Praclab1.txt, here we go. Dragon Cavi Data. Let's just put it... Okay, see if you guys can get it from www.qcat.org/temp, and it'll be down the bottom. Actually, it's not quite down the bottom. It starts with P, so insert F7P if you're using JAWS, or Control F Prac, or Control Shift F if you're using NVDA Prac or something. And if you're using something other, some other sort of screen reader, I don't care.
Did you say qcat.org/temp?
Yeah, T-E-M-P.
I'm not finding it.
I'm getting a 404 slash.
Oh, really? I might have broken something. Let me have a look.
So am I.
Hang on. Why are you getting a 404 not found on that? I betcha I've botched the permissions on it. Okay, carry fail. Aha! It had a capital T. Let me fix that. because that's just nasty. Okay, it's now temp with a lowercase t. I didn't see that because I was in Windows Explorer and I wasn't looking at my braille display.
Ah, it's alive.
It is, and the JPEGs, in case anybody cares, are various pictures of Cisco stuff, and I can't remember what they are. I'll get somebody later to have a look. They're pictures of some gathering thing we did a couple of years back. They'll probably go out of there at some point.
Dumb question. NVDA, what's the find command?
I thought it was Control-Shift-F, isn't it?
Nope.
How about I just move the pictures out of the way so you've got less to look through?
I think it's Control-Modifier-F, or the whatever they call that key.
I found it.
Insert key, or whatever.
It's only like the second link from the bottom. This is much nicer, Kerry. I don't know why, but when I was opening your link last week from Dropbox in my browser, all of the line feeds were messed up, so this is much easier to read.
Oh, okay, that's odd. Blah, mv, star.jpg. There we go, the pictures are all out of the way now, so you've got them in a subfolder called pictures, which will significantly clean up the index that you're playing with. And in case anybody cares, the VoiceOver Getting Started volumes 1 and 2 in Duxbury format are exactly what they say, but I think they are for Snow Leopard or Leopard. I think they're for Leopard, so don't get too excited. But they are Braille versions of the VoiceOver Getting Started stuff. I don't know why we produced them, but we did. Actually, I know why it looks better, because obviously Apache is handing back a proper MIME type, and the browser is aware that it's a text file, perhaps, and doing the right thing, whereas perhaps it wasn't with Dropbox. That might be a reason.
Yeah, I think so, because the line feeds were not there when I did this last week, straight from Dropbox, which made it a nightmare to read.
Ah, are you on a Mac or something? Because I think the PC people were okay.
No, it's Windows.
Oh, okay, alright. Alright, well, it's okay, it's better. We've just got a better configured web server. I'll just content myself with that for a few seconds. Alright, guys, we've got to figure out who's going back in. The workstations have been rebooted multiple times until they all worked. All of the links on the Ethernets are up, so you've got to go back in and reconfigure your workstations again. If you would like to edit /etc/network/interfaces and actually put the configuration in there, you are welcome to do that. But you guys probably need to drop back in and reconfigure the 6 workstations for the necessary addresses, and then we can get started on working on the routers.
So I guess I'll stick with you, Jason, on pod 2, like before.
All right. You want to take you want to take 3, I'll take 4.
Okay.
I'm loving NVDA and TerraTerm, by the way. That is really, really nice.
It is. And the good thing about NVDA and TerraTerm is that when you drop to the correct object nav level, which I think it does by default, the review pad is completely separate. So the object nav lets you review what's on the screen, but it actually has nothing to do with any of the cursors, and that can be really handy. To get that functionality.
Position 1.
Yep, okay. To get that functionality in JAWS, you've got to use the invisible cursor, which is easy enough, but it's 2 taps of the minus key and it's a pain. Hello. Tracy.
Okay, Tracy.
Matt, we're doing pod 2, right?
Yeah.
Last time I checked, that's where workstations 3 and 4 are.
Yeah, I got
them. I could mix them up a bit.
I've been answering JAWS 13 questions all day, man. Give me a break.
Oh,
it's okay. Actually, one of the things that does annoy me about JAWS 13, and this one's actually reasonably constructive, believe it or not, is that it decides it wants to download the OCR components before you install it. Which is really good, except you don't actually know what's going on, as we discovered if you don't have an internet connection. It eventually dies and gets on with it, but it actually does download a whole stack. And I hope that warns people somewhere, because in Australia there are going to be some very unhappy people on bandwidth caps that are going to get OCR stuff downloaded to their computer.
Just curious, why does it always tell me that it's unable to resolve hosts, workstation, whatever, whenever you do sudo access?
Because it actually looks at the hostname that is in the file, because the sudoers file actually wants to look up a hostname, and I don't actually have domain name resolution configured properly on that image. I intend to fix that up with the new All Singing All Dancing image TM, but I just tended to ignore it for the moment, because it kind of works.
Okay, fair enough.
What IP address are you setting on 3?
.2.
Do Chris and John want to do 5 and 6 or something? I mean, we'll only be able to have 4 in at once, so we will have to take turns.
Oh, I said I was going to do,
You're doing 1.
But I can do 5 or 6 if that would be easier.
Well, I don't care. Have you done anything yet, John?
Not yet today. I haven't.
Okay, well, you can do 5. Yeah, you can do 5. You're doing 5.
Okay.
Kevin, do you want to do 6 just for the practice? Because I don't think you've done anything for quite some time.
Sure, I'll have to,
You got Telnet in the Mac terminal? That's alright, I'll put the commands into chat. Like I do for everybody every week. The interesting stuff I find in my Dropbox folder. I've got the interview with Karen Jacobson, the voice behind the Karen speech synthesizer.
Oh, I wouldn't mind hearing that.
You're wishing my command for a very short period of time. One moment. And there you have it.
Okay, workstation 4 is configured.
But can it ping its router?
It certainly can.
Ooh, hey, that's even better than last week. Oh, wow, this thing's still too sensitive. I'm going to... Okay, let's try that. Yep, that's good. Oh, the other problem with these routers, guys, is that they only have a level 4 license, so I'm afraid you're limited to 200 VPN tunnels on these free routers that we're possibly giving away at the end of semester. So we'll have to be a bit sad about that.
Alright, looks like I can ping the router and your workstation, so we should be good, Jason. Does someone need my connection into the bundle?
I'm not sure yet. Oh, there we are. I've probably been really loud. I'm sorry, guys. Is that better?
No, you were fine. You sound good this week.
Okay. No worries. Yes, I think what we're going to do, guys, with the flight sim thing is at the moment we're going to put up the mono one. And Brian Moore's offered to do another one if we need another one done. So I thought that'd be a terrible inconvenience for him, but he assured me it wouldn't be that much of a problem. Although this week we have a presentation on accessgrade.com, a website that is going to attempt to figure out whether sites are inaccessible or not by itself eventually. So that should be interesting, I hope.
Is it ifconfig eth0 on the IP address? I can't quite remember the command here to set the...
Yep, that's correct. And we have a 90%... I told Matthew yesterday, but we have a 90% chance that we are running the Linux course. It's probably starting in early January. So if anybody's interested... Linux Systems Administration course. I'd like some ideas on what people would like covered. Some of you probably know it all, but there might still be a few shell tricks I can teach people. For example, echo !! Will show you your last command. Quote !! Quote will show you your last command.
All right. Workstation 1 is using ETC network interfaces, and the interface is up.
Excellent. Does anybody want to have a look at etc. network interfaces to see what it is, or does anybody not care? I can explain it if anybody cares. You can actually put the configuration in there so that it'll stick, which is what Chris has done.
Yeah, I'll have a look here. /etc/network interfaces.
Yeah, you can cat it. cat /etc/network/interfaces or less /etc/network/interfaces. I don't have most installed, so you can't use most, I don't think.
So, username and password is cavi on the at the telnet thing?
Which telnet thing? No, the password for the telnet thing, because it won't ask you for a username, is the pod you're working on, so pod 3.
No such file or directory. Is it all run together, one word? Network interface?
/etc/network/interfaces. And make judicious use of tab complete. So /etc/any/tab/in/tab will make you a happy person.
It's amazing what happens when you type correctly. Here we are.
I used to have that argument with my ex-wife. She would type something in, and she's like, it doesn't work. And I go, you didn't type it right. And then once we'd finished yelling at each other and she retyped it, it worked.
Oh, and I did shoot Ian an email about Exploration 2.
Oh, good. If anybody else wants Exploration 2, we'd encourage you to shoot Ian an email as well. So he's got some idea how much interest we've got.
And, Brian is going to as well.
Okie dokie. I think Pranav will probably do it too. I'll have to get in touch with him and tell him. I forgot to tell him yesterday. We were too busy talking about the Raspberry Pi, which I'm assuming everybody here's heard of, the little $25 ARM computer that's coming out sometime this month.
I might get one. I'm not sure what I'll do with it yet, but it sounds quite cool.
Hey, worst case scenario, you can install MPD on it and attach some storage to it and use it as a music player.
Hmm. Does it have anything for audio, or would you have to connect a terminal to it?
Yes, it has a sound card. I think it has HDMI out, but it has audio in it, so you could have eSpeak and speak up coming out of it if you really want, along with your music.
Hmm.
So in this file where it has, there's not much here, some comments where it has auto ETH0. It establishes your default interface, and then you would just add below that your configuration stuff, so it would use that at boot time. Is that how it works?
Okay. Auto ETH0 says that ETH0 is going to be brought up on boot. If you don't have auto ETH0, you've got to bring it up yourself with IF up. You then say iface eth0 inet static, because you want to put a static address on it, and then you go address and the IP address, mask and the mask, I think, and gateway and the gateway. I don't actually have to skim the man page, but I'm pretty sure it's mask. It's either mask or netmask and the mask.
I think it's netmask. Kerry, is there anything you want me to do on pod 2?
Sorry, what about pod 2?
Is there anything I should be doing? We've got the workstations configured.
Have we decided what IP addresses we're setting on the serial links of the router? Because on pod 2 you've got ISP fun. You've got to set up two serial interfaces. One to talk to routers on pod.
I'll go.
Okay. Ah, and it turns out that by default Reaper records from the left mono channel of an interface, so it's all Reaper's fault because I didn't change the default. So I should have gone through and used Total Recorder like I normally do, but it wasn't installed. So that's why we got a mono flight sim recording. Do you want to forward Alex the logos and stuff? And
Kerry, I thought Show INT Brief was supposed to do a brief summary, but I've never been able to get that to work.
I thought it was Show IP Brief or something. Brief's not for interfaces, I don't think. I don't think there's enough connections for me to telnet in and have a play. I can have a look.
There's a slight typo in your text file here.
Sorry?
Your text file for the practical exercise?
Yeah, what about it? Is there an error?
Yeah, just a small one in case somebody reads this later. Workstation 3, you've got the the center two octets reversed for the IP address.
Not for much longer.
Workstation 4 is also not correct.
Try refreshing it now. I think I fixed it.
Yep, that's it.
There we go. And they say HTTP isn't close to real time, so there you go. Okay. Now we need to set up serial interfaces on various routers. Now, hang on, has everybody got all their workstations happy and talking to their routers? Are we all cool with that, or are we still tampering with things?
5 is working.
And how are you going with number 6, Mr. Jones? Do you need me to type commands into things, or you can't get in yet?
I'm on the pod, but I'm trying to find the file with the commands down the QCAT server.
Oh, no, there isn't one. I'm going to type them into the chat for you.
Awesome.
That'd be documentation and organization, right? fconfig f0 a.b.c.d. There you go. ifconfig f0 a.b.c.d.
Cool.
Username is cavi slash c and the number of the one you want to connect to. Slash s redisplays the list in case you've lost it off your screen. Alrighty, well let's start.
C6 doesn't work.
Are you sitting at a CMS prompt, CMS grader? Really? Slash C6 works for no space between C and 6. It's not number 6. You don't want to connect to number 6. You've got to look at what's on the screen. Workstation 6 is not number 6. Workstation 6 is 14, I think.
That serial switch really is a cool device.
Yeah, once you get used to it, it rocks. They're expensive. I think it was a couple of K for that.
They cost that much?
Oh, yes. They're by Black Box, and Black Box stuff is always expensive, and we couldn't find anything else out of the box like it that had 16 serial ports and a Telnet interface and all this sort of stuff. Because even building a workstation with a 16-port serial card tends to be fairly expensive.
Well, in that case, it should be cool.
Yeah, there are some cool things that aren't cool about it. One of the things is that on the front panel there is a touch panel. And one of the touch panels is save configuration, and the other one is reset configuration. And if somebody goes in and brushes against that, it completely loses all of its configuration, and I've got to reload it from the backup file.
And someone thought that was a good idea. Reset device by touching the front panel.
Yeah, you have to sort of hold it down for a second to do it, but if you sort of lean on the wrong bit of the front of it, it just resets it, and it's great.
Okay, so router 2, both serial links are set.
Okay, so you have IP addresses from the file on those, which you would have pulled from the, if I got them right.
Actually, let me look. Hold on, I may not use ones in the file.
You want 10.1.1.1/255.255.255.252 on serial 0/0/0 on the ISP. And nobody's given me IP addresses for serial 0/0/1 or the other workstations 5 and 6 yet.
Okay, so I did 10.2.1.1 on the serial 001.
Okay, 10.2.1.1. Okay, so somebody on the pod, the pod 3 is going to have to set the other end up for 10.2.1.2. I'll just put those in the file. And there we are. That's at least the serial for workstation 5 and 6. I'm just going to put the ISP stuff in.
IP is set on workstation 6.
Okay, you've got workstation 6 set up, or...?
Guess I still have to do the gateway stuff, but the IP is...
There's the command you need for the default gateway on workstation 6 in the chat window. Okay, who wants to do serial interface on router 1?
I can do that.
Alrighty. Well, we're here to help you. I'm here to help you.
Okay, I'm logged out of the pod.
There are actually plans to get another remote bundle over here, so we'll have two of them, which will give us more to play with. I don't want to see the association's power bill if they do that, because that rack's got three routers, three switches, and three 1RU Pentium 4 servers, which I can't see being very power efficient. I'd say we're probably pulling a kilowatt on that rack. I haven't measured it, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Gateways.
Plus a serial switch and a power switch, right?
Yeah, but I don't think they'll pull much. It's more the fans and stuff in the routers. Put it this way, the temperature inside the storeroom with all of the rack gear in it is probably about 5 degrees hotter than the room that I'm sitting in now, so I'd say there's a fair bit of energy being burnt.
I'm envisioning a lot of wires and cables in that rack.
Yes, basically what happens is there's wires going from all the different things and they're all tied to the sides of the rack with wire tie, and they're all locked into place that way. Put it this way, there are 12 serial cables, 12 power cables, 12 Ethernet... No, not quite 12 Ethernet cables. 8 Ethernet cables... plugged into various switches. It's an absolute mess. We gave it to a couple of the work experienced students and said, here's a picture, organize this, and they ran away.
It looks like the serial interface for router 1 is already set to the proper IP address. And
Is it up, though?
Yes, it is up, and the LINE protocol is up.
So I think it was... I don't know who was working on router 2, but you've obviously set the clock rates on router 2 already? Sorry, who's working on router 2? You've already set the clock rates, have you?
Yeah, 64,000 on both.
Alrighty, now... That's all looking fairly good... But can anybody tell me why it doesn't yet work?
Because the routers don't know where to send packets to.
That's very true. Now, what I want people to do is have a look at show IP route on their routers and see what their routers currently know about.
Do you want me to do router 3?
Sorry?
Would you like me to do router 3? Or is somebody on that already?
Does somebody want Kevin to have a look at router 3?
I can already ping workstation 5 and router 3 from workstation 6, so some things are set.
Yeah, router 3 is mostly configured. We did router 3 last week. But we don't have the static routes in, so is everybody cool for Kevin to have a go at router 3? And you guys can work on routers 1 and 2?
Yeah, that's cool.
Sure. Router 1 knows about the two networks, but there's no gateway of last resort set.
How does router 1 know about the two networks?
It says, hold on. Okay, it has C as the connected code, and then it has, I'm using control as my ventriloquy, and that makes it hard to read.
Yes, it would.
It was perhaps not the best,
idea. May I recommend write control for ventriloquy? I suppose it does make it read, because every time you hit control,
it doesn't. It doesn't matter, because you still can't read. Okay, so...
I switched mine to the pause key today. It's working much better.
Yeah, that's very cool. Okay, but it might know about the two networks. Okay. It might know about it might know about the serial link, and it might know about the actual stuff that's connected to it. But I'd bet you the Nullarbor or bucket of sand that it doesn't know about the other networks that you need to talk to.
No, yeah, it knows about the one connected to the fast Ethernet and the one connected to the serial link. But does it need a gateway so that it will send packets that are not destined for the small subnet for the serial interface, so it'll know where to send.
A gateway won't help, or a gateway would help with that. There's a couple of ways of dealing with this. One is to have a gateway of last resort on that router and tell it that the gateway of last resort is the ISP. Or you can actually put in a route for the ISP. You may want to put in both. Now, there are two ways to set this up. Do we want to start by setting these up with static routes and then move to a routing protocol? Or do we want to... I think we should probably do that because you guys probably need the routing practice.
Sounds good.
That'd be good.
If Corey's on Skype, Grace, can you get in touch with him and tell him that his password is... whatever his password is.
What is his password?
For Ventrilo.
Oh. It's his first name.
Okay.
So on my router, I'm seeing router 2, I'm seeing direct connections on fast Ethernet and both serial links.
Okie dokie, but the only things you're seeing direct connections to on those serial links are the 10 dot whatever networks on the actual serial links. So what you need to do on the ISP router is add a static route to the networks 1 and 3 via your two different serial interfaces. Does anybody know what would happen if IP in global configuration mode IP route? Question mark. Don't worry about it.
So, I have a question that probably everyone else knows, but when you log out, how do you get back to the serial switch?
Control B for breakback.
I should have remembered.
Not necessarily. Did actually tell you when you logged in, but it's all good. Okay, so what would happen if you didn't add the routes back onto the ISP router and you only added them on routers 1 and 3? What would happen? Does anybody know?
You could send packets and they would get to the router, but they wouldn't be able to get from like router 2 to the next hop.
In fact, you would send packets to the router and the router would see the packets, but it would have no way to get packets back to you because it doesn't know about those source IP addresses. And that wouldn't work so good.
Yeah, is that not what I said?
It's kind of what you said. Well, I pointed out that you could actually get packets to the router, but it wouldn't know how to route them back. Which was... because you said that you could get to router 2, but then it wouldn't know how to get to router 3 and stuff, which is also true, but it also couldn't get packets back to you either.
Yep, makes sense.
Does anybody need help with the IP route syntax and stuff?
Yes, please.
Yes.
Okay, it's IP space route space destination IP address space netmask space and the IP address you want it to go to. If my memory serves. I can look up Ciscopedia because there aren't enough connections for me to look on the bundle.
Is this from the enable prompt, or do we need to do the...
Config T. And then you should be able to go IP space route space question mark, and it should tell you things.
So I'm going to do IP route space 192.168.25.0, and then the netmask, is that right?
Yes, I believe so, but check with question mark. I'm just about to install Ciscopedia on here.
Does the bundle boot me if I'm idle for too long, even though I was logged into a workstation?
I didn't think it... it's not supposed to. Oh, it will if you're sitting around... I think there's a 15-minute timeout.
It's possible it's been that long since I typed something, but... be that as it may, you do have an available connection to the bundle if you'd like to use it.
Alright, let me have a look. I'll very briefly have a look here. Which router should I be looking at so that I don't step on somebody's toes temporarily? Or are they all in use?
I'm in router one.
Okay.
Huh, yeah, I can't get this to go.
Which one do you want me to have a look on?
Router two. I can't get it to take the route command. I'm doing question mark, but I'm just not interpreting something right.
If you disconnect, I'll have a look, and then I'll tell you what you need to do, and then you can connect back in and do it.
Right,
just to drop out of the router. Yep. Okay. Seven. Okay. 102.25.0. So then we want the net mask. And now you give it the forwarding router's interface, which is 10.1.1.1. Yes. Oh, hang on, 10.1.1.2. Oh, yeah, that
okay,
did it.
So that's the piece. Okay, so it was IP space route space 192.168.25.0 space 255.255.0 space and then 10.1.1.2.
That is correct.
Okay, I didn't see that last part, the forwarding interface.
If you put question mark, it says IP of forwarding, IP address of next hop. I think it said. Hang on.
I keep expecting Cisco to give me the rest of the command syntax, and I guess it just doesn't do that.
No, it doesn't. It only gives you it piece by piece. And that can be a little bit... But if it gave you the whole command syntax, it would fill up a screen full of information, and that's probably not what people want, generally speaking.
Yep. Okay, let me know when you're out of there, and I'll do the other one.
I've disconnected. Sorry, I disconnected like a minute and a half ago. I will break out of the switch altogether so that you guys can have another connection. There we go, you have another connection into the switch. Is anybody else having luck with the routers for... the routes for... 1 and 3? Are we getting any closer to getting the routes configured on routers 1 and 3?
Just lost one of my routes. I'm trying to figure out where it went.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
That was kind of odd.
Okay, so both those routes are in.
Alrighty, well, once somebody gets one of the routes into either routers 1 or 3, you will be able to test your configuration. Am I the only one that's noticed that the pops for turning the volume down on your iDevice don't get quieter as the volume goes down? That's very silly.
I've noticed that. It's really annoying.
Yeah, it is weird.
Yeah, it's like, I'll just turn my volume down. Pop, 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 pop! I'm trying not to annoy the hell out of everybody around me. Oh, well, Apple. Never mind then. They do on the Mac. Like, I think the pops get quieter on the Mac, but they don't on the iDevice.
That's true.
Has anybody read that Steve Jobs biography? It's very interesting.
They do get... Sorry, Kerry.
Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. You're on.
Sometimes the pops do get quieter and sometimes louder. It depends on... Like, if you're just trying to go quieter, it doesn't get... The pops don't get quieter, but if VoiceOver is talking and then you try to make the volume quieter, then the pops get quieter also.
Okay. I'm sure the biography of Steve Jobs is really, really interesting. What I laugh about is that, you know, everybody goes on how amazing Steve Jobs is, and he is. He's an incredibly amazing fellow. But have you ever noticed that nobody's actually talked about how he wanted to get rid of the keyboard off the Macintosh line of computers altogether? He wanted to kill the keyboard dead. He's like, we don't need keyboards anymore. We just need a pen or a mouse.
I think that's actually mentioned briefly in the book. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he was an amazing guy. He wasn't a very nice guy, though.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I wouldn't put nice in the same word as Steve Jobs. Very talented, very incredibly brilliant, an excellent business person, but certainly not nice. And I think he wanted to get rid of a lot of the user interface stuff, like keyboards and stuff, and the engineers just went, nope, it's not happening. The other book I've had highly recommended to me, if people are interested in that sort of stuff, is Ghost in the Wires, the one about Kevin Mitnick and the Nakamura case. That's apparently a good read as well.
And so is something like The Wizards That Stay Up Late.
Oh, okay. I'll look for that one.
Kevin Mitnick's books are actually good, though, too. They're, what is it, The Art of Deception and The Art of Intrusion, I think they're called? Oh, they're quite good.
Yeah. The other book that was good was The Hacker Crackdown, which I think was by... I don't know if that was by Bruce Schneier or by somebody else, but I ended up... Back in the early 90s, they were talking about it on the news group, and I asked whether it was available in accessible format, and the author actually got back to me and said, oh, I've posted it to you on a floppy. And I thought, well, can't ask for much more than that. I should probably take that TCP guide out of this folder too, shouldn't I? Because it's already in TCP book. Okay, how are we going with routes, guys? Are we almost getting there with the static routes?
Is router 2, is that 192.31.88.1?
No, it's... if you're coming in from router 3, it's 10.2.1.1?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, I can't believe it's November already. Where did the year go?
What's the command for adding a gateway? The Linux command? Apparently my interfaces thing isn't working.
Oh, you've got to do an IF down and an...
Okay.
No. You've got to IF down, IF up to get the stuff to come from etc. interfaces. If you don't IF down, IF up, it won't apply what's in your interfaces file.
Okay, I thought I could do etc init d networking restart and have that do it, but I'll try IF down and IF up and see if that works.
The thing for gateway is gateway space IP address in the interfaces file.
Yeah, that's what I have. I'll bring it down and back up and see if that fixes it.
Now, somebody was after me for the Ubuntu server virtual machine. I can't remember which one of you it was, but did you get it going? Oh, it was Jason, because we were having a bit of a... bit of an exchange on Twitter, and I was tweeting badly on my iPod. Did you get it to go?
I did. I was having all kinds of strange issues with my bridging adapter, though, but I think it was actually because I had VirtualBox and VMware on my machine. I think I got it going. I actually ended up installing my own version of Ubuntu Server, though, but because workstation... what is it, 8? Whatever the new one is. Workstation 8 will do an easy install of Ubuntu. It just takes it off and does it. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah, but then you get no SSH ability. Did you discover that too?
I did, but actually I was able to use JAWS OCR.
JAWS OCR feature. Yeah. Why am I not surprised? Yeah,
we knew
that's
was
right.
Coming.
Yeah, we're waiting for that. Yeah. Yeah, so when you install it with an easy install, you don't get an open SSH daemon. So once the machine's up, you've got to maximize the virtual window, perform OCR on it, log in, and do an app-get install open SSH-server. Or you can type blind into it if you're brave, and I have done that. You log in and type blind into it, but it is nice to have the OCR to check what you're doing. But yeah, you are correct. You can OCR the screen. The other way to do it, in case anybody cares, is to hit... let me think. Escape... No, enter, escape, enter... And then you can do expert space console equals TTY capital S1, and then you use COM0COM, and you can just control the entire install process over the serial port of the virtual machine. So that's another way of getting around it. And that was actually the method I was going to use in the Linux course we run for you to install your own virtual machines. So lazy people can use Easy Install, but the ones who actually want to see the install dialogues can do it with COM0COM and the serial console.
Alright.
I was trying to get COM0COM to work, and it wasn't wasn't behaving itself. But you said it's Enter, Escape... Is it Enter... Wait. Enter, Escape, Enter, and then Expert, Space... Console equals TTYS1?
Enter selects English. Escape bails you out of the graphical boot thing, and Enter confirms that, and then you're sitting at a boot prompt, just in case you cared. But guess what? The JAWS OCR feature can tell you that too. Just thought I'd get that in too.
Yeah, it's true. Like I said, I wasn't sure the problems I was having were that or COM to COM. I wasn't sure what the issue was, but I was definitely having issues with it.
Sorry, I'll just answer Chris's question, which is probably on track, and then I'll get back to COM0COM, because there's another wrinkle you need to know about COM0COM.
So I'm trying to trace route to 192.168.26.2, which I think is a should be a workstation on pod 3, maybe. And it gets to 10.1.1.1, which I think is the... one of the serial interfaces on the router in pod 2 with like an 18 millisecond round trip time, which is kind of crazy. Anyway, and then it doesn't go beyond that point. So I'm not quite sure where the problem lies.
There could be... I'd be getting the person on router 2 to check their routes and make sure they're pointing at where they think they are, because I may have mistyped your route for you. This is also possible.
All right, check it.
And to answer your COM0COM question, you've got to go into the COM0COM controller and rename the serial ports and call them COM something and COM something else. Otherwise, you cannot use them. And that would be your problem.
I think I did that, but I'll look.
Any luck getting from router 3 back to router 2 and stuff, or are we still working on that?
I'm thinking that... Is the serial interfaces configured at all? I'm thinking not.
I don't know. Check. I'm the annoying manager type person. I'm not actually here to help you with the nuts and bolts of... Well, I am here kind of to help you with the nuts and bolts, but it's your guys' job to get the network going. I'm just, you know, big picture bloke with all the crayons. Oh, and just a warning to anybody who's using Reaper to record stuff like I was last week, you've got a context menu on the track and go and tell it to record in stereo. Or you get mono, as Derek has just informed me.
Okay, it looks like all the routes look good here, from what I'm seeing.
Do you want me to log in and have a look, or...?
Okay, so I can ping 10.1.1.2.
10.1.1.2 should be the IP address of your end of the serial link, Chris. Do you want to check that? I think it is. So your routes should be pointing to 10.1.1.1 on your router. So are they pointing to 10.1.1.1?
Yeah, I mean, I can ping 10.1.1.1.
Okay, and you should get milliseconds, something within, you know, 18, 20 milliseconds or something round trip time to show that it's going over a serial link.
I'm getting about a 24 millisecond ping to 10.1.1.1.
All right, so the next question is, can you ping anything that is connected to the networks of this router 2, which is the 192.31.88.2 or something like that?
Yeah, that's a workstation.
I can ping 192.31.88.2 with about a 25 millisecond, but I cannot ping 192.168.26.2. Which is connected to router 3, I believe.
Ah, now, has anybody put in a route for 192.168.26 on router 2?
On router 2? Yes, there is a route on... Yeah, there is a route on router 2.
Okay, do you want to check it's pointing at the right spot? You should have a route on router 2 for 26 and 24, I think. Or 26 and 25. You should have a lot of routes on router 2.
Yeah, it's there.
Well, there must be a problem somewhere.
We haven't looked at router 3. Have we?
Okay, I cannot ping 20... I cannot ping 26.2 from router 2.
So where is the route to 26.0 pointing?
10.2.1.2.
What? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, can you ping 10.2.1.2 from router 2? Oh, this is getting exciting. Do we like host names, everyone?
Cannot.
Okay, so now we blame Kevin. Go on, off you go, Kevin. Go fix it. Yeah, this is all very mature and stuff. Okay, so what's wrong with router 3?
I'm configuring that serial isn't configured at all, so that's what I'm working on.
Okie dokie. So it's... Okay, there we go. I say it with a complete smile. This time it's all Kevin's fault, so that's why you guys can't reach that router yet. For the moment. It could have been anybody who's working on that router. I'm not picking on him specifically.
I was going to be nice and tell you all about host names and how wonderful they are, but maybe I won't.
Oh, well, I know about them too. Fault. Yeah. Well, I've been blaming everybody else. I mean, he's got to get his turn. The funniest thing to see this, guys, is when you get a bunch of 15 and 16-year-olds to design your network for you, and you have them setting up with routers and switches and stuff, and you have them all setting up to design, say, a World of Warcraft-like gaming network, and as the teacher, you just sit back and watch all the infighting as they blame everybody else for every single problem. They eventually get it sorted, but it's quite entertaining to watch. Now, of course, in a professional situation, we would not be saying it's all Kevin's fault. We would be gently requesting that could Kevin please check his end of the routing topology, as we believe we've gone over ours. But I'm sure we're all old enough and clever enough to know all that by now. But I'm just mentioning it for the recording.
That isn't nearly as much fun as it's all Kevin's fault.
I know. But yeah, it's not all about fun, apparently. All right, so whilst Kevin's working on that, because he can sort of ignore us for a little bit, can anybody tell me what is the problem with this current setup as it stands? Like, it will work, but what is the problem with it?
Well, if a link goes down or something, there's no way to rearrange the routes.
That is true. If a link goes down, there is no way to arrange the routes. Would it also be fair to say that there is a fair bit of administrative overhead? What if we had router 4 and that was somewhere else and we had to add in routes for router 4? Would you believe that would be a reasonable amount of administrative overhead to actually go in and hammer in all those static routes each time we want to add in another stub network, for example?
Lots of margin for error.
Okay. Now, I don't know where your notes talk about this. Have you guys read about routing protocols yet, or they don't really cover it much in the notes so far? I think it's in like 11 or something they touch on it. But have you guys read about routing protocols before?
They touched very lightly on it in whatever the last one I read was, 6, I think.
Yeah, look, I kind of think... So you guys shouldn't be doing this lab until like halfway through Exploration 2, but... The labs in Exploration 1 are okay, but they're kind of wussy. It's like, oh, look, log into a router and look at the configuration, and now log back out again. And look at the configuration of your workstation. And it's like, okay, well, that's important, but, how do we get these things to actually do real work? So there are ways of configuring what we call various routing protocols. And in case you want to know how to set host names, I think it's IP host, and then you can put IP host space the name and the IP address, just in case Kevin didn't want to tell you about them. So if you want to do that, you can put IP host and a few host names in, so you don't have to type in the numbers anymore. It's up to you guys whether you want to do that. It's worth mentioning that IP host is only relevant on the router that you are connected to. It is not like distributed like DNS or anything, so you have to hammer the host names in on the various routers that you're working with. Oh, and there's another connection to the bundle in case you want it for something, John, or somebody else wants it. I didn't realize I was still connected.
Yeah, but doing
so
a little bit
host,
of reading and... Sorry, John.
So go ahead. Go ahead, Jason, I'll ask after.
Oh, I was just saying, I've been reading a little bit on routing protocols, and they get ridiculously complicated.
They can. Although they're as complicated as you need them to get. So if, for example, you're looking at RIP, which is what we'll be playing with here, all you have to set is which routes you want to advertise and what the metrics are. We're not expecting you to configure OSPF or ISIS.
Or BGP.
Or BGP, yes.
Because you probably remember, to get into the serial interface, int space S0/0, it doesn't... That's why I remember...
S/0/0/0. These have three numbers on their serial interfaces because they are funky routers. They're not 2600 series, they're the ones up from that. So you've got, int S0/0/0 will be the one you're configuring up. I think it's slot number, card number, port number, or something.
Yeah, I've never seen, I saw it in the config, and I tried to just copy it directly out of the config and paste it into the command, but it didn't like that either.
Oh, interesting. Watch up too, Grace. When you've actually done all of that, you might want to have a look on Catch and see what the recording equipment is today. Otherwise, I'll do it after lecture.
What is?
Recording equipment on Catch of the Day.
It looks like a bunch of software.
Oh, okay. Nothing that exciting then. All right.
Just a question about the host name. Is that associated with a certain specific IP address? I'm just having a little bit of trouble understanding how that would work for the IP host command.
The IP host name just allocates a name to an IP address. End of story. So if you have IP host cuckoo 10.9.6.4, if you go ping cuckoo, it's going to put in 10.9.6.4. That's all it does. It's not very clever, but it is somewhat useful.
Not very clever, but it saves a lot of typing.
It certainly does. It certainly does, and that is the advantage to it. But as you can imagine, once your network scales to be bigger than what we have here, host tables become unwieldy, and you should really have bitten the bullet and got your copy of DNS and bind from Bookshare and configured up a real DNS server. Or if you're on a Windows environment, you set the DNS up with Microsoft's tools. I saw a good quote from NT Magazine. And it was, an NT server can be administered by an idiot, and often is. And I thought that was a good quote.
I wonder what they'd say about OS X server.
Oh, have you played with Server Manager? That thing is not fun.
No, it's not very nice.
We had problems running OS X server, which is why we pulled it out of here. Basically, Server Manager kept going around stamping on all of the changes to our Apache configurations, and then the version of Mailman that was shipped with the server was ancient and so customized that we couldn't feed the mailing lists in, and we gave up. But if you start off on Mac server and put everything on Mac server, it's somewhat easier. Although the RAID array kept failing every 3 days and we never figured out why. That was a bit odd. Did you guys want to put some IP hostname stuff in while we're waiting for Kevin, or...? Or I can talk a little bit about routing protocols if we want. Sorry, am I talking about routing protocols, or has everybody gone to sleep?
No, I'd like to know about some routing protocols.
Keep in mind, guys, you guys get daylight savings, so I think your class gets earlier next week. You guys go back an hour or something.
Oh, good to know. Okay.
And of course, if you're interested to know about that, I'll just finish this thought and then I'll let you get on to what you're going to say. www.qcat.org, student resources, there is a time zone page that Chris set up. Yay, Chris. Use it next week so that you know what time your lecture is, because it will tell you. It's very cool. Sorry, go ahead.
What's due for next week?
Nothing at this stage. I've got to sit down and do some lab modifications, so I will set you something by Friday, which will not be due next week. It'll be due the week after. I think this stuff is somehow more important.
Cool.
Someone could greatly save my sanity by answering a completely off-topic question very quickly. With this Windows 7 workstation that I've been setting up this week, it's got all kinds of junk in this Toshiba machine about fingerprint scanners and such. So the little, what used to be XP balloons, how the hell do you find them in Windows 7 so that I can tell it to stop prompting me to set up my fingerprint?
Remove the fingerprint software.
Yeah, that's one of the ways of doing it. Isn't there some JAWS key that will read those alert balloons?
Yeah, how do you find the notifications, though? They're not in the place they used to be. And I'm still learning Windows 7.
I usually just JAWS...
It'll take you to the system tray,
but it doesn't give you the notifications. You've actually got to JAWS cursor real quick to the bottom of the screen and find them before they disappear. There has to be a better way, but I'm not sure what it is.
Alright, sorry. I'll sort it out this week. I just thought of someone new right now because it keeps nagging me. But let's hear about routing protocols, Kerry.
Okay, let's talk about routing protocols because that's like relevant to the lecture. And if you do come up with a command, let us all know because we'd all like to know.
I'll be happy to share.
Now, did anybody want, apart from that article that I posted which didn't have a lot of good alt tags, I'm going to read through the future ones. Do people want those sorts of articles if they're any good? And I will check them in future. Or should I leave them off list?
No, it's good stuff. I'd rather see that than people asking how to fix their brother's XP machine.
Yeah, it's a hard line to draw, guys. As a list administrator, I've got to, stand somewhere between the line of something that rhymes vaguely with custard and being a nice person. And it's difficult because his questions are probably relevant to him at his age. So it is a fine line to tread. Okay, routing protocols. They are protocols that exchange routing information between routers. Hey, bet you didn't guess that bit. There are a number of them. RIP version 1 and version 2. Difference between RIP version 1 and version 2 is that RIP version 1 uses classful addressing, so the class of your subnet mask is important, which is why I rassed on somebody for putting all their stuff on 10.0 in the assignment. RIP version 1 doesn't work with that very well, because it will assume you've got one big Class A network and there's no way to tell it otherwise. RIP version 2 sends its updates either by multicast or via point-to-point, and it does send updates through either one of those methods, and we'll get on to how to do that. We might not get to it this week. We might do it first thing next week. Then you've got routing protocols such as BGP, which is the Border Gateway Protocol, and OSPF, which is Open Shortest Path First, and there's another one called ISIS, which is Interior something something something. Wikipedia will tell me in a second. And they are all different ways of distributing routes between computers so that the routers can teach each other about the routes. ISIS. No, it's not the god of fertility in this particular example. Oh, they sell property in Australia. No, that's also not war inter... inter-area something. I can't remember.
I have a question.
Yes.
So I've looked through the document that you just put up on the server, and there doesn't seem to be any IP for what you want the serial 000 on router 3 to be.
That'll be 10.2.1.2, because it needs to be on the same subnet as the one on the ISP. Hang on, that is in the document. You needed to hit refresh. It says serial 0/0/0 is 10.2.1.2/30. Okay, and so the point of these routing protocols is on a pre-given timer, as far as we're talking about things like RIP and OSPF and stuff, well, RIP sends out routing updates every 30 seconds with a timeout of 90 seconds. So what you do is you broadcast the routes you have for your router and what we call the metric, and the metric is the cost of the route. So the cheapest route costs one, and the more expensive route will cost two or three or four, depending on how you set the metrics up for each route. A route with a higher cost will be less favoured than a route with a lower cost, so it tries to send things to the lowest numbered metrics. So what we're going to do next week, because we're 11 minutes from the end, is we're going to replace our static routes with RIP version 2, and we're going to watch as the routing topology converges, and you will all see your routes get learned from the other routers, and everybody will be happy because you will only be feeding the routers in that are relevant to the particular router that you are connected on and telling it which routes it needs to advertise. Any questions on that? I haven't said much about routing protocols, but any questions on what I've said so far?
I'd imagine each of the protocols has its own strengths and reasons that you'd use it. Is RIP2 predominant, what we'd encounter the most often, or is it completely dependent on the application?
It depends on how big the networks you're running and how much stuff you're actually doing. RIP is fairly simple. It has a fairly high time to converge. A lot of people tend to use OSPF. But then if you're doing really big stuff, you'll tend to use BGP. And the thing you've got to understand is it's what you're going to use depending on what your routers understand. So if you've got a 2-bit Linksys without enhanced firmware, like if you've just got the regular bog standard firmware, it's probably going to understand RIP version 1 and 2, and sometimes not even that very well. However, if you have something that is a little more capable, then you're able to use things like OSPF, ISIS, and BGP. Should I mention at this point that Mikrotik does BGP and stuff? Anyway, there we go, that's mentioned.
You beat me too.
Yeah, they do all that. If you're at home and you're connecting to an ISP and you have one default route, so you're either on Charter, or you're on Comcast, I'm also sorry, or if you're on Verizon, yeah, I'm still sorry, you've got one link to the internet and that's it. So you've got one default route and that's where all of your packets go. But if you happen, for some stupid reason, because you've got more dollars than cents, have a Comcast link into your house, a Verizon link into your house, and a Charter link into your house, you can actually set the routing tables up so that everything by default will go over the Charter, and then when the Charter goes down, it will go over the Comcast, and then when the Comcast goes down, it will go over the Verizon. I have no idea how good any of these companies are, except for the fact that Charter doesn't tend to be up as much as some of the other ones. But apart from that, they're all good. It's also possible if you've got different links between offices. So say, for example, you've got... And a lot of people can use routing protocols for things like... you can have a microwave link between offices, and then if the microwave link drops out, you can have ADSL between the offices, and then if that drops out, you can have ADSL. So it all depends on what you're doing with the routing protocols as to how they're used. On the bigger, wider internet, you're actually looking at different fiber connections, different links through different ISPs, all charged at different volume, and depending on what links are available and which links are not available depends on what you end up how you end up setting these routing protocols up. So probably not much use on a home network, unless of course you're setting up some sort of wireless infrastructure to charge all of your apartment buddies for internet access or something. I don't condone that sort of behaviour, but that's the sort of thing you could use routing protocols for on your gear, so that the access points and stuff can learn where the other access points and stuff are. Guys, you want to copy running config startup config so we don't have to put all this in next week, because we're getting towards the end of lecture. Any questions?
Okay, router 2 is saved.
Yay!
Router 1 saved.
And I have a task today of fixing the TFTP on those workstations.